Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio, where we bring you information about Minnesota's National Guard, the military community, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon Program, and Department of Veterans Affairs. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is also a Vietnam veteran of the United States Air Force and a member of the VFW and American Legion. Now, here's Tom Lyons.
Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's 4th of July weekend show, we'll learn about the 150th anniversary of the Battle of Gettysburg, and we'll have a special guest with a Minnesota connection from the United States Army's Joint Special Operations Command. But first, we're going to talk about the 150th anniversary of Gettysburg. Joining me now is Matt Cassidy from historic Fort Snelling. Matt, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Matt, can you set this up? It's the 150th anniversary of one of the biggest battles of the Civil War. Can you tell us about it?
Absolutely. 150 years ago, starting on July 1st, was the largest battle fought in North America, the Battle of Gettysburg, one of the turning points of the American Civil War. And Minnesota has a distinct connection to that battle through the experience of the 1st Minnesota Volunteer Infantry. It was the first regiment that was officially promised to fight in the Union Army, and it was raised here in Minnesota. And the soldiers were part of the Army of the Potomac, which was the Union Army that was involved in the Battle of Gettysburg. And on July 2nd, the second day of the battle, General Winfield Scott Hancock was noticing that Confederate forces were on the verge of breaking through the Federal lines to rush up Cemetery Ridge. And he looked for a unit that could buy him some time to get some reinforcements in. The closest one on hand was the 1st Minnesota. And he pointed off into the distance at the Confederate flags and said, "Take those flags." And so the 1st Minnesota went on a charge and halted the Confederate advance, blunted their advance, and bought the general enough time to bring in reinforcements. As a result of their attack on the 2nd, they suffered over 80% casualties for the men that were involved. And as they pulled back, they were put in a place after the second day's action, where they initially thought that they would be relatively safe, which was pretty much smack dab in the center of the Union lines. And so not only did the 1st Minnesota get involved in the second day's action, but they were part of the Union effort to stop Pickett's charge on the 3rd. So they were right at the section where Confederates actually breached the Federal lines, so they helped stop them there. So Gettysburg was a very important battle, and Minnesota arguably played an incredibly important role.
And it was actually a turning point in the war.
It was. It was the last time that Lee invaded the North, and many credit the battle with helping to turn the tide against the Confederacy.
Joining us now from Gettysburg is the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash. General Nash, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Tom. It's great to be on again.
Sir, I'll bet you've had a couple of very, very fascinating days at Gettysburg.
It has been, Tom, and it's built till today, the crescendo, basically, of the 3 days at Gettysburg. And I'm currently standing on the right flank of the Union line, just behind the angle where the high water mark, as people have read about, or the copse of trees. So I'm overlooking the ground where, as everybody understands, Pickett's charge when Lee sent what he thought was going to be deciding forces to the Union line where he was going to attack after the first 2 days of pushing the Union forces back to Cemetery Ridge. So it's quite a spectacle. They are going to conduct, which it's not a reenactment, but they have a group of, obviously, historians, reenactors, just people interested in the battlefield, across the field, lining up in about 45 minutes, and they will reenact, if you will, Pickett's charge coming across Emmitsburg Road and then into the Union line. So they expect between 5,000 and 8,000 individuals will basically walk the same ground that Pickett's division did.
General, you're on that hallowed ground, and you've got all that activity and reenactors. You must be able to almost feel the battle.
You can, and it's almost like a state fair event with the number of people here, the cars that are parked, the traffic jams, but people getting out with their umbrellas. It's, again, a hot July day, just like the Confederate and the Union soldiers did that day with their wool uniforms on. So those that are observing this can feel what it was like that afternoon when they did the last day of battle here. So cannons are going off in the distances as they're prepping fires. And just to give an indication to the people here what it felt like that afternoon, what the soldiers felt.
General, I understand you had an opportunity to meet Alabama's Adjutant General.
That's correct. As we brought the large contingent from Minnesota, there was over 80 individuals that came out by bus and car and plane for the July 1, 2, and 3 events. And a lot of them stayed on to watch this reenactment. But when we knew we were going to do this and when Governor Dayton set up the Civil War Task Force Commission, I contacted the Adjutant General from Alabama, Major General Barry Smith, who we wanted to have here because, as your previous guest mentioned, when Hancock turned to Colonel Colville and asked who those soldiers were, and he said they were the 1st Minnesota, and he wanted to plug that line. That line was being breached by four regiments from Alabama and from Wilcox's division. And so to have the general here representing those regiments was a pretty somber moment as we met at Plum Run, where Colville's 262 brave souls attacked. And so he attacked the Alabamans. And so we did a ceremony there yesterday about the same time that Minnesota attacked. And we met then General Smith at that point.
It must have been a very interesting meeting on that ground in the exact spot 150 years later, sir.
It was, and I think folks from Minnesota sort of got an indication, I think. You know, now it's our citizen soldiers, both from Alabama and Minnesota and across our nation, who have really joined forces, obviously, since the that day. And now we wear the same uniform, and we serve our communities and our states and our nation as one. And I think it was a poignant point, I think, for the those that were in attendance to see that reunification, albeit it certainly happened many, many years ago, but to visually see that enemies 150 years ago joining hands and exchanging gifts at that point.
We're speaking with Major General Rick Nash from Gettysburg at the site of the 150th anniversary of the major battle in the Civil War. General Nash, not only are you there on the 150th anniversary and you've got to meet the Alabama's Adjutant General, but it all happened around July 4th, 150 years ago. What a way to spend your July 4th weekend, sir.
Well, it's if you have to be a place, and if you trace your lineage back to the 1st Minnesota, I don't think you can honor their memory any better than being here at that site. And certainly the weather is replicable of that time, as I mentioned, the heat and humidity day. Plus, there's clouds in the sky. And as most of your listeners know, you know, July 4th, when Lee recovered all of his wounded and withdrew and went back to Virginia for the last time. And war continued for a couple more years later, but he withdrew from Seminary Ridge in a rainstorm that covered his withdrawal. But so the weather is, you know, replicating that also, I think, for those that are here to observe it if they're students of history. So we couldn't have asked for a better event and a turnout. And it just shows, I think, how America remembers what was done during those 4 years of Civil War, and certainly the turning point, as most would believe, the high watermark of the Southern forces, Lee's Virginia Army, and then going back south and never get this far north again. And really, as your previous guest mentioned, it was even the First Minnesota playing a key role in really probably saving the Union.
General, on this 237th anniversary of our nation, what kind of shape are our Minnesota National Guard soldiers and airmen in, and are they all safe today?
Well, Tom, is and thanks for asking. Our great citizen soldiers, the great privilege I have leading the men and women of our Army and Air Force in Minnesota, We're the number that we have deployed, thankfully, is down to less than 200. Last year, if I were speaking to you, I'd be telling you we were over 3,600 that were deployed. So it's great news for our soldiers, airmen, our families, and their employers. But they're still in harm's way, and we have to keep them in our thoughts and prayers.
Well, we're certainly glad that a lot more of them are at home for barbecues tomorrow and thinking about the anniversary of this great country.
Yeah, and I would ask your listeners, as they sit around watching fireworks and gathering with families and having barbecue, that they think about the freedoms that our men and women in uniform have provided them. And I want to thank you for your service and during the Vietnam era, and thank all of our Vietnam veterans. But just take a pause as the birth of our nation to think about those that have given their last full measure, as President Lincoln said, throughout our time.
General, I'd like to thank you for joining us today all the way from Gettysburg.
Well, thank you, Tom. I wish you and your listeners would be here to see this great event of America coming together. And I would tell you, as I walk around and see all the vehicles, almost every state is represented, and I've seen license plates from Canada. So America has turned out for commemorating what happened here July 1st, 2nd, and 3rd of 1863.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Tom.
That was the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash, all the way from Gettysburg on the 150th anniversary of the battle there. In a moment, we're going to have a special guest in the studio, a native Minnesotan, to talk to us about the United States Army's Joint Special Operations Command. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a moment, we're going to meet our special guest from the Joint Special Operations Command. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Shelito.
On Tuesday, July 16th, Minnesota businesses, state leaders, and veterans will come together for the Minnesota Veterans Career Fair at the Earl Brown Heritage Center. All job-seeking veterans are invited to attend this veteran-friendly event. It is the largest veteran career fair in Minnesota, with more than 100 exhibitors participating. Job opportunities, educational information, workshops, and resume review will be available. Providers with expert knowledge of veteran services will also be present to assist and answer questions. For more information about the Veterans Career Fair, visit positivelyminnesota.com/veterans.
Thank you, Commissioner Shelito. For more information, please go to minnesotamilitaryradio.com. It's our great pleasure now to welcome Lieutenant General Joseph Votel from the Joint Special Operations Command to Minnesota Military Radio. General, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Tom. It's great to be here today.
General, I understand that you're from St. Paul.
I am. I grew up in St. Paul, went to St. Luke's Grade School and St. Matthew's Grade School, and then graduated from Creighton High School, all in St. Paul.
So, sir, did Creighton put you on the road to a career
well,
in the military?
Well, it certainly did. I mean, being a military high school and then also having kind of the Christian Brothers influence there was certainly a key attraction for me, and something that had a great impact on my life. Creighton was, is where my dad went to high school. Where I have a number of uncles. I have five older brothers and a number of cousins that were there, and at the same time I was, and so it really is very much a Votel family tradition at the time. So it was great. It was kind of a natural place for me to go somewhere I really wanted to go.
Sir, I just got to ask, when you were at Creighton, did you ever dream that you might be a 3-star general?
I never did. The great thing that Creighton had is they had a small but very involved military staff of active duty and retired military NCOs who interacted with the students on a regular basis. So you got to know them, you got to know some of their experiences, and so you got to share and feel some of what that service meant to them. And of course, that had a big influence on me.
Sir, did you, by going to Creighton, did that help you get into West Point?
I don't know that if it did. It probably did. I mean, Creighton has a great academic reputation, and it's definitely a college preparatory school, and so it kind of set me up well for that. Interestingly, my desire to go to a military academy really grew out of a visit that I made out to Baltimore when my oldest brother lived out there back in the 1960s, and he took me out to the Naval Academy to see a parade and kind of take a look around. And as soon as I got out, I was 10 years old at the time. As soon as I got out there, I kind of thought, wow, this is pretty cool. This is something I'd really be interested in doing. So I was kind of on the thinking I would maybe go in the Navy and try to go to the Naval Academy. But through a variety of different things that happened, as you kind of get into the application process and you kind of work through medical and all other kind of screenings, it just happened that West Point was for me, and I was fortunate enough to get a get an appointment from, at the time, Congressman Joe Carth in the 4th District here, and so we just kind of showed up on reception day there at West Point and have been doing it ever since, so I'm glad that I did.
So go Army, beat Navy.
Go Army, beat Navy, which is has been awful tough the last 10 years here, as Navy's kind of dominated the Army. But hope springs eternal here. I'm pulling for the Army team this fall.
So you went to West Point, and I understand you graduated and were commissioned in 1980, sir?
I was commissioned in the infantry in 1980, and then went out and went through all the kind of the normal infantry training that officers go through, and then my first assignment was to Germany. Our first assignment. I got married shortly after I graduated to Michelle, and another fellow Minnesotan here, and so we went to Germany in our first assignment, and I had a great experience there. Really, kind of a different time in the Army when we're focused on very significant Soviet threat at the time, but it was a great experience, a great way to kind of see the Army and kind of spend your lieutenant years.
Sir, was there a point in your early military career where you were thinking about should I stay, should I get out, should I?
Absolutely.
When did you make that decision?
Yeah, absolutely. No, I think everyone kind of goes through that. I think I hit it about the 7 or 8 year mark. I was actually had come back from Germany. I was serving down at Fort Benning and was an instructor at the infantry school, and had spent so much time teaching and training young officers in the infantry that it's just at that point we just kind of decided that this is what we wanted to do and wanted to see how far we could take it, and there looked like there's some great opportunities coming up, so we tried to take a big advantage of that.
We're speaking with Lieutenant General Joseph Votel on Minnesota Military Radio. General, how did your career progress then? At what point did you think you'd get to be a general officer?
Well, I'm not sure anybody ever thinks they're going to get to be a general officer. You can't really plan it that way. But what I was fortunate enough to do was have a lot of good experiences. So I was able to take my experience and get into get assignments into the Rangers and have some really good experience and be exposed to some really great leaders out there who taught me and mentored me along the way and got me into great positions and more importantly gave me great opportunities. It allowed me to get out and exercise my leadership, and I think more than anything that helped me. It gave me good exposure, and it gave me good experience that hopefully I was able to kind of bring back to the units that I had the opportunity to serve in.
And sir, at what year were you finally pinned and got your first star?
I was selected in 2003 and then got promoted here in 2004. In fact, we actually did the ceremony back here in St. Paul. We did it at St. Matthew's Parish. My father at the time was unable to travel, so I got permission from the Vice Chief of Staff of the Army, General Dick Cody, who said, hey, listen, here's the situation. I'd like to get promoted. I want my dad to be there. And I said, oh, by all means. So we came back and did it in our parish back on the west side of St. Paul. So it was great. We had all our family together and a number of friends and visitors that came. And so it just ended up being a really, really great event. And I was just really glad that my family was able to be there, and especially my dad was able to be there.
That'd be a happy day for a proud father.
I would hope so. He sure seemed to be a good day for him.
General, we're glad to have you here on this July 4 weekend, the 4th weekend, and but we have to take a short break. When we come back, I'd like to talk to you about the Joint Special Operations Command. This is Minnesota Military Radio, and we're speaking to Lieutenant General Joseph Votel. Please stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Bill Popp of the Minnesota Military Family Foundation. An Army squad is made up of 8 soldiers, and when the squad is on patrol, each soldier is dependent on each other for safety. When a soldier is distracted because of a financial crisis with the family back home, that puts every soldier on the squad at risk. The Minnesota Military Family Foundation helps turn a bad situation into a positive one. The foundation provides financial support during a financial crisis at home. This helps re-energize the soldier. The soldier feels the financial burden lifted and has feelings of pride because of the support from the community at home. When the soldier is no longer focused on the financial crisis at home, the soldier is able to stay engaged in the mission and do his duty to protect other soldiers in the squad. When we help one soldier, we're helping all soldiers. When we help one military family, we're helping all military families. If you're in a position to help, please donate. Go to MinnesotaMilitaryFamilyFoundation.org.
Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. Joining me today on this 4th of July weekend, home for a visit, is Lieutenant General Joseph Votel from the DOD's Joint Special Operations Command. General, when we went to break, we had talked about you were able to get your first star, Brigadier General, back here at home. And in the last 10 or so years, you got a couple of more. What type of commands did you go to from 1 star to 2 star, and now you're 3?
Yeah, thanks. My first assignment as a flag officer was actually serving down in the Pentagon. I was leading the Department of Defense's IED task force, the Improvised Explosive Device Task Force, that was really charged with looking at innovative ways to tactically, technically, and using our intelligence to help us kind of defeat these roadside bombs and other bombs associated with them. Of course, we're having such a devastating effect on our soldiers in both Iraq and Afghanistan. So it was a very unique position, and it was a brand new organization. So I had the opportunity to kind of start it from the ground up, and just really learned a lot. It really It really put the impetus on me to bring all my skills to not just leading organizations, but really looking into the processes and the systems and all kinds of things across the Department of Defense to try to bring things together to provide fast and reliable solutions for our service men and women forward who are fighting the battle and had to deal with the effects of these IEDs.
Sure, it would seem that was a very important time since September 11th, 2001, because we started out with Humvees and the vehicles had to progress and evolve.
Absolutely.
And it was about keeping our soldiers, or keeping our service members safe.
It sure was. And, really it came down to, a variety of things, how we understood what the enemy was doing and, how we used our surveillance capability to understand that and keep ourselves away from that, how we used technology to protect us, and most importantly, how we used our training to make sure our soldiers, Marines, sailors, airmen, others that were involved in this could avoid and then deal with the situations where these bombs might be located. So a very complex problem, and something I was very glad to be a part of. I continue to run into people all the time who are involved in that effort, and they continue to still help us in many, many ways to eliminate that threat.
And sir, was there another command that?
Right. Yeah, I left. Fortunately, I left the Pentagon, and I was assigned down to Fort Bragg as the assistant division commander at the 82nd Airborne Division, and had the good fortune of being there a couple years. And about 15 months of that time was spent forward in Afghanistan, and deployed with the division headquarters and ported the division to Afghanistan, and from 2007-2008, and so I had the opportunity to spend that time forward in Afghanistan again, it was a great opportunity. It was at a time when that we didn't have nearly as many forces on the ground in Afghanistan as we do today, but it was a time when we were reaching out to the Afghans and really starting to build our partnership with them. So great experience.
Yeah, it'd be an honor to be part of the historic 82nd Airborne.
It was. That's a fantastic, fantastic division. And, much like we heard about with the 1st Minnesota, that's an organization that has a great legacy of service to our country as well.
And, sir, how did you get to the Joint Special Operations
Command? When I left the 82nd, I just really moved across post to Fort Bragg. Joint Special Operations Command is at Fort Bragg, and I was fortunate enough to be selected to be the deputy commanding general at the time for then Vice Admiral Bill McCraven, who was the commander there. And so I spent 2 years with him and with the command at that time as his deputy. And it was, again, had an opportunity to deploy back to Iraq, to Afghanistan, and then just have an opportunity to participate in a lot of great, great things that took place.
Sir, that's quite a career already, and you're still going strong.
Yeah, it's good. I was able to leave there and spend a year down in Tampa at the U.S. Special Operations Command as the chief of staff, and then very fortunate to be selected to come back and be the commanding general at the Joint Special Operations Command. So it's been great, and of course, you know, the service is about the people here, and so that's what keeps me, and I think what keeps Michelle getting up every morning and continuing to serve the country here is just the great people that you get to work alongside every day.
We're speaking with a Minnesota native home for the July 4th weekend, Lieutenant General Joseph Votel on Minnesota Military Radio. General, I know the special operations is something that you can't talk about everything you do, but can you tell us a little bit about the makeup and the mission of the Joint Special Operations Command?
Sure. The Joint Special Operations Command, or as it's known, JSOC, is a component of the U.S. Special Operations Command, and it's as the name says, a joint organization. So we have servicemen and women and civilians that come from all of our services: Army, Navy, Marine, Air Force, that are all under one headquarters, and then we have a fairly broad mission that is not only supporting our commanders forward with forces and expertise and supporting their missions, which is certainly a large part of what we do, but we also have a responsibility for looking at ways that special operations forces can operate more effectively, can leverage technology, can look at new techniques, and look at new innovative ways that we can approach our mission around the world.
And sir, can you give us an idea as how many service members are involved?
Yeah, there's in my headquarters is about 2,500 service members and civilians that are closely associated with us, and then we have a variety of other units that support us. And so, you know, when you all add it up, it's in the probably the 10,000 to 12,000. Service member and civilian range. So the size varies based on the mission and varies based on what we're doing. So we have the ability to receive organizations and then detach organizations as our mission requires.
So, sir, it would seem that you've got the best of the best, the most elite.
Absolutely do. And, I mean, it's just the ability when you show up at work in the morning and you meet these great young Americans that have dedicated their lives and dedicated their families to the service of our country. It just kind of keeps you motivated. And, of course, the young people we have serving today are as good as I have ever seen in 33 years in the Army or in the military. They come highly motivated. They want to be in the service. They're highly educated. They're technically savvy, and they're very, very committed to service to the nation. And so for a guy like me, it just really gets me excited to get up in the morning and show up for work, because I know it's going to be, every day is going to be a great day.
General, I know that your troops have gone through extensive training to get to the level where they could be part of the special operations, but the training doesn't stop, does it?
No, it never does. And that's and these young people, they push themselves, and they want to be the best. It isn't we aren't satisfied with just meeting the standard. It's about achieving and setting new standards and continuing to look at innovative ways that we can protect ourselves, we can protect our nation, and do the mission that the American people expect us to do. So we're always pushing the envelope. That's what we think the American people want us to do, and that's certainly what we continue to do every day.
General, you've been in the military since 1980 and had quite a career already, and been in Special Forces, and now you're leading Special Forces troop. What is the, have there been any real personal challenges, any tough challenges in your career?
Well, you know, certainly along with, you know, serving in places like Iraq and Afghanistan is, comes along with the loss of those whom you serve with. And that's certainly something that stays with me. And I've lost some pretty close friends and fellows that that I've served with. And that hurts. And, you know, you know their families personally. And so, you know, that certainly is something that stays with us. You know, along with military service does come, you know, the opportunity or the requirement to be away from home a lot. So, you know, I've certainly created a lot of, you know, absence that my wife has had to step in and take care of our boys and kind of lead our family and fill in for me. And I've certainly missed my share of soccer games and other events, birthdays and anniversaries along the line, and those aren't easily made up. But you know, I'm supported by a great wife, and who continues to be a great partner with me, and so that makes it all worthwhile in my view. So,
sir, here in Minnesota, we've got a number of organizations, the Beyond the Yellow Ribbon groups, the family foundations. There's a lot of support for the troops and their families while they're deployed. Do you find that there's an equal amount of support across the country?
Yeah, there absolutely is. Every place we go, Americans turn out and they love their service members and they take good care of them. And that goes from the big cities. I've stood in downtown New York at the World Trade Center site and talked to firemen down there who are as committed to defending their community as we are to our country and are very, very supportive. And then I've been in small towns for. You know, unfortunately, the funerals of some of our fallen comrades here in those towns are just so proud and are so supportive of our service members. It's just awe-inspiring. And then, you know, Americans are very generous, and they are always looking for ways to take care of their service members. And so I'm just very, very grateful for the continued support that we see just across the country for our men and women in uniform.
Thank you, sir. We have to take a short break. When we come back, I'd like to talk a little more about the War on Terror. We're speaking with Lieutenant General Joseph Votel on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been joined today by Lieutenant General Joseph Votel from the Joint Special Operations Command. General, it sounds like you've got a lot of highly trained, fantastic, patriotic Americans under your command, and I would guess if you told them to go run through a wall, they'd just keep running until they did.
Yeah, that's absolutely the truth. They're just fantastic young men and women who come from all parts of our country and just are very dedicated to our mission and are very committed to defending our great country.
Sir, from the sidelines, as I've been a civilian for over 40 years now, but looking at things that have changed and reading the paper since September 11th, 2001, it looks like the mission of the special operations has changed and evolved, and it looks like the whole war on terror has evolved. Can you tell us about that evolution and what's
Sure.
happened the last dozen years or so?
Yeah, certainly. You know, special operations forces played a key role as we undertook our operations after September 11th of 2001. You know, first by getting us into Afghanistan helping overthrow the Taliban and start moving forward there, and certainly in places like Afghanistan, Iraq, they continued to, you know, conduct operations directly against the terrorist enemies that we were fighting in both of those locations, and certainly have made some significant strides in all those areas to disrupt those networks out there who are truly focused on disrupting our way of life here, quite honestly. And so the Special Operations Forces have done a great job with that. Along the way, you know, one of the things I've observed is in the last 10 or 12 years is the relationship between Special Operations Forces and our general purpose forces has become very close. I can tell you as a Special Operations officer that we are very dependent upon conventional forces for the support they provide, not only on the battlefield, but certainly logistically and providing us bases and other places from which we can operate, and we're very, very dependent upon them. And so the partnership between special operations forces and conventional forces is very close, and I think most Americans wouldn't completely understand that, but I'm here to tell you that it is. And that includes our National Guard and Reserve members. I know Rick Nash on a little bit earlier talking about the great citizen soldiers in here in Minnesota, but that we've been very dependent upon them as well. And so, you know, this war on terror has been a forcing function to bring all of us together to really bring our best capabilities that each of the different communities brings to really bring it to bear, you know, against our enemies.
Sir, I know we've made some progress, but what is your assessment of the threats that terrorists might still present to us?
I think we have made some progress in a number of areas, but I will tell you, in my estimation, there are still threats out there that we need to be concerned with. There are still organizations out there that are very much focused on Americans and American values and Western values out there that we need to be concerned about. They wake up on a daily basis, and they're looking for ways to come after us, and we have to remain prepared. So as we continue to move forward here, our readiness is very, very important, and we need to continue to be postured so that we can take the proactive, activities and actions that will prevent attacks on the homeland.
Sir, it's a great opportunity for you to come home back to Minnesota on the July 4th weekend. Yeah. But on this weekend, our 237th anniversary, we've got troops all over the world, don't we?
Absolutely do. And probably hundreds of countries here around the world. We've got servicemen and women that are serving their country. And so, you know, it is great to come back to Minnesota. It's, you know, the place where we're from, and we're glad to be back here. It just brings a huge flood of memories back here, just what a great life it is back here in Minnesota. I would just say for the citizens of Minnesota, thanks for your continued support. I don't go very far in the Army or anywhere in the Department of Defense without asking a group who's a Vikings fan or who's a Twins fan or who grew up in Minnesota, and I always see a number of hands come up. So Minnesota is well represented out there, and you know, when you look and you talk to these kids, you certainly understand where their values come from. So thanks to the citizens of Minnesota for raising such great men and women to serve our country.
Sir, we just got a few seconds left. Any final thoughts for our listeners about your special operations troops?
Nope, they're as good as advertised, and I'm incredibly proud to be in a leadership position for them. I hope that I'm worthy of being in that leadership position, and I try to demonstrate that every day to them. So, Tom, it's just a great honor for me to be able to serve.
General, I'd like to thank you for taking time when you're home here to spend with us on Minnesota
great.
Military Radio.
Glad to do it. Thanks, Tom.
That was Lieutenant General Joseph Votel from the Joint Special Operations Command on Minnesota Military Radio. Matt Cassidy, you've been sitting there quietly for a while. I know that you've got a lot of activity out at Fort Snelling this summer.
We sure do. Everything from our daily program that goes on from Tuesdays to Sundays, to special events throughout the rest of the summer. So there's something for everybody to come on out. Our goal is to try to tell the complex history of early Minnesota, the different perspectives from all the different communities that made up this place and played a role in making Minnesota the place we know today. So fascinating history. We love to talk to the public, so make sure to come out and see us sometime this summer.
You have some reenactors, just like we heard from General Nash, and you've got some classes for some of the young people.
We do. We have summer camps that are running right now, very successful, based on historic literature. We have classes in blacksmithing that you can take. We have partnership with canoeing with the state park, so lots of different activities go on. We also have coming up in August a big Civil War weekend where we partner with local reenactors to bring the fort to life as it would have looked in the 1860s. So whatever you're interested in history, come on out and check it out.
And where can they go for more information, Matt?
For more information, hours, admissions, and special events, you can go to all one word, historicfortsnelling.org.
And if you want to make a family day out of it, they can come out on Sundays to the Fort Snelling Chapel but for a service at 11 and then come over and see what's going on at the fort.
Yeah, that's right. You can make a whole day of it.
Matt, thanks for joining us today and for your special insights on the 150th anniversary of the Battle of Gettysburg.
Thank you for having me.
As we close today, we thought it would be appropriate to leave you with a bit of history. On July 2, 1776, the Continental Congress voted and approved a resolution of independence, legally breaking our ties from British tyranny. 2 days later, on the 4th, the document we know today as the Declaration of Independence was approved. It was during this time that one of our nation's founders, John Adams, wrote this prophetic letter to his wife Abigail. The second day of July, 1776, will be the most memorable epoch in the history of America. I am apt to believe that it will be celebrated by succeeding generations as the great anniversary festival. It ought to be commemorated as the day of deliverance by solemn acts of devotion to God Almighty. It ought to be solemnized with pomp and parade, with shows, games, sports, guns, bells, bonfires, and illuminations from one end of the continent to the other, from this time forward forevermore. While Adams was a few days off in his prediction of the day we now celebrate, the sentiment still rings true. So as you celebrate this, our Independence Day, we hope that you take a moment and remember our nation's brave patriots who have risked their blood and treasures to support and defend the United States and will continue to ensure that we all live in a free country. Thank you for listening to Minnesota Military Radio, and have a happy and safe 4th of July weekend. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week and every week.
You've been listening to Minnesota Military Radio with Tom Lyons. Tom is the founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition firm. This has been a production of Clear Channel, MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com, the Minnesota National Guard, BeyondTheYellowRibbon.org, and the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Podcasts of the show are available at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.